I was born about a mile from here, 2 miles from here at Leeville, West Virginia, in a coal camp. My dad worked for the coal company, and we lived in a coal company house. Came back here in 2000, decided we just wanted to be back in the mountains and just live a nice, peaceful life, fishing, hunting, living a good life, having a garden, you know, back to my roots. And I got back here, I started hearing these blasts. The Coal River Valley is a very narrow valley, and on the right side is Cherry Pond Mountain, and it is being totally annihilated. That's Twilight, that's Lindy Town, that's Montcoal, that's Shoemate. The entire Cherry Pond Mountain, which was a duplicate of Coal River Mountain at one time, has been totally destroyed. And directly below that are our communities, from Whitesville to Glen Daniel, 25-mile stretch of small communities of people that's lived here for 200 years or more. And Coal River Mountain is on the left side. Now, on the other side of Coal River Mountain is Cayford Mountain, which has been totally wiped out. It is gone. And Coal River Mountain stands as a buffer. It's our only buffer to protect us from getting totally overwhelmed with blasting dust and poisoned water and everything else. We have to have that mountain or we have to leave.
And that is an excerpt of the new documentary, The Last Mountain. You heard the voice of Bo Webb, an activist who's deeply involved in that. The Last Mountain is directed by my guest, Bill Haney, who now joins me on the phone. Welcome to Uprising, Bill.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks so much for joining us. Well, why is Coal River Mountain the last mountain? Why is it so important when we talk about the mountaintop removal that is happening in West Virginia?
Well, I think there's several reasons. First, it's, you know, its own particular and explicit beauty and biological wealth. You know, it is the last great mountain in Central Appalachia. Central Appalachia is the kind of biological heart spring of American forests. And, you know, in the last ice age, when the glaciers came and they wiped out forests in most of the United States, in fact, there was 2 miles deep ice over Manhattan, for example. Only the mountain ridges in Appalachia remained. And it's one of the reasons that they have, you know, 80 dominant tree species per square mile when the norm for most of America is 3. So it's the biological heritage, it's the cultural heritage. I mean, this is not only, you know, where the songs about Purple Mountain Majesty came from, but it's where Davy Crockett and Daniel Boone roamed. It's where bluegrass or lots of country and roots music developed. But it's also a metaphor. You know, we are something that I think few Americans know. Over the last 10 or 12 years, we've been obliterating the landscape through much of the kind of cultural heartland of the Appalachian Mountains.
The coal companies often pit coal miners, who are, of course, a very large percentage of workers, or, you know, the coal mining companies say that they provide livelihoods in West Virginia, and they often pit residents and environmental activists against coal miners. How has that dynamic changed, if at all?
Well, you're absolutely right. The coal mining companies, and it's really the executives of these companies, you know, who are deeply self-enriching, you know, big bonuses for them, reduction in benefits for the workers, you know, like to talk out of both sides of their mouth. And on Wall Street, what they talk about is how they're increasing earnings. And the way they've been doing it is to destroy jobs. So in West Virginia, for example, 50 years ago, there were 151,000 coal miners. Now there's 15,000. 50 years ago, the pay for the average miner was roughly 120% the pay of the average CEO. Now the average CEO gets between 500 and 1,000 times the pay of the average worker. The union structure provided safety and benefits packages that at least gave some assurance to the workers. Most of those have been decimated. So it is true that there are jobs for coal miners in Appalachia, and it is true that all Americans are sensitive in these vulnerable economic times of any family whose job might be at risk. But in fact, the practice of using explosives, I mean, these guys are using the explosive power of a Hiroshima bomb once a week in the mountains of Appalachia. They're using these explosions and enormous piece of equipment, 22-story high, they're called drag lines, to get rid of workers.
Now, the people who justify mountaintop removal state that they return the mountains to their original state. And in your documentary, you take us to one of these restored mountaintops. Tell us what you found.
Well, I mean, we found that it's a pure act of political and regulatory corruption. The notion that these mountains have been restored, you know, is an example of a tiny loophole that was put into the regulatory standards for handling our common landscape that the mining companies have driven a dump truck through. So the notion was occasionally you'd find a place where there would be an economic benefit to create a piece of flat space, and if you could return a mountain to its, and I quote, approximate original contours, then it would be acceptable to engage in a certain amount of land removal. And the mining company has taken that loophole and driven, you know, an extraordinary set of landscape changes to it. So that phrase has now mean that if you take a mountain that is shaped like a pyramid and you obliterate the top 90% of it and dump it in the lakes and valleys, because these folks have filled in 2,000 miles of rivers and stream. I mean, imagine if somebody wanted to fill 2,000 miles of the Colorado River in. Would it be allowed?
And in fact, you would think that these coal companies would be bound by the Clean Water Act. But as you show in your documentary, George W. Bush, particularly after his re-election in 2004, set back existing legislation through all of the political appointments that he gave to coal companies that backed him. So there's a direct line from Washington to the coal companies in West Virginia.
George Bush is reputed to have said that his election to the presidency was a coal-fired victory.
Hmm.
And West Virginia, which had historically been a Democratic state, famously where John F. Kennedy's election turned, went Republican hardcore. And, you know, there are those who speculate this was because he agreed to let the fox guard the chicken hen as soon as he was in office. And very shortly after he took office, mining lobbyists became senior officials in the administration. The rules were changed, and they were changed in ways that have allowed for the poisoning of our water supplies, not just for the people in Appalachia, but the Cumberland Plateau, where this mining is taking place, is the wellspring of fresh water for much of the East Coast, and it's being poisoned.
I want to remind our listeners, I'm speaking with Bill Haney. He is the director of the new documentary, The Last Mountain, which opens in theaters on the 15th of June. We'll give our listeners information about where they can catch this film at the end of our interview. Now, one of the most central characters in your documentary is somebody who's not even from West Virginia, and that's Robert Kennedy Jr. Tell us about the role that he's playing in this movement against mountaintop removal.
Well, you know, what drew me to this story, in part, was the extraordinary heroism of the ordinary Americans who are really at the center of this battle. The waitress who gives up her job to try to stop the destruction of her community, the former Marine that you played a clip from when we opened this interview, Beau Webb, the 92-year-old grandmothers and college students and octogenarians and academics who have come from all across America in what is right now the biggest civil rights movement since the 60s. I mean, there are more acts of civil disobedience going on in Appalachia right now than there has been anywhere in America since Selma.
Wow.
And, you know, it's, and when these, the locals were struggling against a political system that's been corrupted by large donations of capital. You know, there's $1.5 billion given by the coal mining companies, the railroads that move the coal, and the utilities that burn it, to politicians just in the last decade, $1.5 billion. And so in the state of West Virginia, where two-thirds of the public is against this horribly destructive practice of mountaintop destruction, not a single one of the major political figures is against it. And the locals found themselves, you know, ultimately shut off. They were dragged in chains from their governor's office when they began to protest the threat that this posed to their drinking water supplies and to their schools and to their community. And faced with not many other choices, they began calling Bobby Kennedy Jr. And Bobby Kennedy Jr. has had a long history of, you know, he's been an environmental attorney for a great deal of time. And he began going down to discover what happened and to take the story that these of the horrors, in a way, that this community is experiencing and their amazingly inspiring courage in addressing it. He began to take those stories to the White House.
One of the horrors, if as you put it, of this situation are the shocking incidents of brain tumors in the area. The person that you profile in your film says that the national average for brain tumors is 1 in 100,000, but in an area that where people were drinking well water that was contaminated, there were 6 brain tumors side by side. Several people died of them. What is the link with mountaintop removal there?
Well, the way mountaintop removal works is they use explosives to get rid of the jobs and to obliterate the landscape, and they rip the coal out. And then the coal is itself contaminated with lots of things, including arsenic, mercury, selenium, uranium. It's radioactive. They go through a step called washing because they want to reduce the amount of that stuff that goes to that has to get trucked or railed to the utilities. And that washing process generates enormous volumes of sludge. There are hundreds and hundreds of sludge pits all across Appalachia holding this stuff, the biggest of which have almost 10 billion gallons, 10 billion gallons of toxic metal sludge. And this stuff leaks into the groundwater, and or it's injected into old mines as the mining companies try to get rid of it. And the locals believe that there's a real correlation between these heavy metals and toxic materials being put near the groundwater or into leaking settling ponds.
Tell us about these toxic sludge impoundments related to what you were just saying.
Well, I mean, I think one of the discoveries for me in making this film was the extraordinary scale that the dark, smudgy paw the coal industry has across America encompasses. I mean, this is trillions of pounds of material moved across the country every year. You know, a big decent-sized coal plant, and there are 600 of them dotting the landscape all across the country, might use 500 rail cars of coal every 12 hours. Half the rail traffic, half the heavy rail traffic in America is coal. So if you add up all the grain, and we're the biggest grain-producing country in the world, and all the timber products, all the metal products, all the consumer goods, all those cars you see moving around, all the chemicals, all of that combined, and the other, that's half, and the other half is coal. So you get a sense of these, you know, just unbelievable volumes. Well, when you mine the coal, you come out with stuff that isn't coal. There's dirt mixed in, there's radioactive things. You know, what the utility really wants is hydrocarbons, and there's a pile of stuff that's not a hydrocarbon. So the companies take that, and they wash it with chemicals, and they dump the residuals in pits all across Appalachia. And as an example, the mining company that is at the centerpiece of our story, it's called Massey Coal, has had a series of spills of these pits. And to give you a sense of the scale, you know, we all were watched in pain and awe at the size of the BP Horizon oil spill in the Gulf a couple years back. And President Obama went down and said it was the biggest environmental disaster in the history of the country, and we all agreed. But that oil spill was only half of the toxic materials just one coal company has dumped into the freshwater supplies of Appalachia just in the last decade. So if that was the worst, then I guess Massey Coal is responsible for twice the worst. That notion, the volumes of this stuff, and then when you actually take the coal to the power plant and you burn it, not only does it produce enormous amounts of toxic materials, tens of millions of pounds a year of mercury and arsenic and radioactive materials and NOx and SOx and other forms of gases come out, causing themselves all kinds of trouble. So the National Academy of Sciences says 47,000 Americans die prematurely each year because of this. 247,000 newborn children have permanent mental cognition challenges as a result of the heavy metals that come out of this. 10 million kids have asthma attacks. You know, but when you see those signs when you go to a lake and you want to fish and it says you can't because the mercury's contaminating, that mercury's from a coal-fired power plant.
Well, Bill Haney, in your documentary, you spoke with Massey Coal's Don Blankenship, the executive there. Tell us what that was like.
Well, I mean, the CEO of the company seems to feel, you know, not just in conversations that he's had with journalists, but in his public remarks. You know, he at least seems to me to be a deeply, let's say at best, a deeply amoral person. It's a company with horrific safety violations. The federal government has recently issued a scourging report on the deaths of 29 miners in the biggest mining disaster in America in 40 years. Mm-hmm. It's a Massey coal mine called the Upper Big Branch. they have tens of thousands of self-reported environmental violations, each one of which is subject to fines of $30,000 apiece. They have a long, rich history of violating the law. And in a debate that the CEO, Don Blankenship, had with Bobby Kennedy, Bobby Kennedy asked him point blank, you know, you keep violating the law. Is it possible for you to actually operate your business without violating the law? And he said no. Now, you know,
So they just include that in their cost of operations.
It's cheaper to violate the law, pay a fine, and just keep doing it. Mm. And if a couple people end up dead or some water gets poisoned or some people are sick, you know, you litigate with them and you pay your lawyers and you drag it out and, you know, maybe that's okay.
Well, the main argument for continuing coal production, which is such a large percentage of where our American energy comes from, is that we just can't do without coal. But in your documentary, The Last Mountain, you put forward a solution of wind energy. How feasible is that? Tell us a little bit about what alternative there is to coal.
Well, I mean, I think you're right. There's a great big lie at the core of this, which is yes, it's dirty, but we need it. And so if you don't look too closely to all the people that are being poisoned, including probably your own kids, then you can plug your iPod in with equanimity. But in fact, it's not true. So the newest stuff out of the Department of Energy, even George Bush's Department of Energy, was that a new wind plant had the same economics as a new coal plant. The United States is the Saudi Arabia of wind. We have more wind resources in this country than any country in the world. We have enough wind resources just in three states, Montana, North Dakota, and Texas, to power the entire country, even if every car in the country was electric, and we could get rid of every other kind of fossil fuel. We have great solar resources. You know, the United States is a country of tremendous technological ingenuity and entrepreneurial attitude, and I don't know how we've become confused by the notion that the best we can do to generate energy is the 17th century technology of burning rocks. But with enough money being poured into advertisements and donations to politicians, that's what's happened. People think we need this stuff that's been around since the Native Americans were in complete control of the continent.
Well, Bill Haney, there's so much more to talk about, but I'm sure listeners can watch the film when it comes out in theaters tomorrow. I want to thank you so much for joining us.
Well, it was wonderful. And, you know, I have to say that I'm so encouraged both in Congress talking to journalists like yourself and by the story of these inspiring Americans at the heart of this tale that I really believe that the trauma of coal is almost over.